Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Sukkah, Lamed Aleph. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. The daf is being learned with Zecher Nishma Chlois Lupin Zaltzman. We started the third parak of Sukkah yesterday. The truth of the matter is I started it 2 days ago, but I guess for an official start, we started yesterday, and we are now into the mitzvah of lulav. The mitzvah of lulav is really part of the dal minim, the four species on Sukkot. We are required to take the dal minim on Sukkot. Min haTorah, we take it the day one. We take it the first day. L'kach l'mechem b'yom rishon, pri etz hadar, and the Torah goes on to describe that you take the dal minim on day one in the Beis Hamikdash. There's a mitzvah to take it all 7 days. Our Mishnah starts recording. And there's a mitzvah derabbanan to take it the subsequent days of Sukkot because of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and Zeichel HaMikdash, which we'll talk about later in the Masechta. And so what we're doing in our Mishnayos and subsequently in the Gemara is we're going to go through each one of the minim, each one of the species. Each one of them has its own set of halachas in terms of what makes them kosher and what makes them pasul. And so, in the beginning of the third parak of Sukkah, so we start with the lulav. We talked about what by the lulav makes a kashrut, what makes a pasul. So we already discussed how the lulav, which is stolen, or if it's dry, is disqualified. And yesterday we spent most of our day yesterday talking about the lulav hagazel, the stolen lulav. We talked yesterday about the concept of mitzvah haba ba'avera, that if I do a mitzvah and I do it as a result of an avera, so therefore it's going to be disqualified. We talked about whether that's a din d'oraisa or din d'rabbanan. We talked about whether it applied to a din d'oraisa or applied, or if it even applied to a din d'rabbanan, to a mitzvah d'rabbanan. And we spoke about other concepts regarding this, the lulav hagazel, the stolen lulav. We left off yesterday with the avankari. The avankari were the merchants of the hadassim, where basically Rav Huna told the avankari, look, when you go out to the when you go out to these non-Jews and you're buying the hadassim from them, you shouldn't cut it, they should cut it, then hand it to you. And now what you have is you have yesh and you have shinui harishos, and therefore it'll take care of the gzela issue. And we tried yesterday to wrap our heads around that, and they said that it's certainly a complex sugya that we discussed yesterday, and we just scratched the very surface of it. And we move on. We're on Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph. We are right now at the top of the Amud, two lines from the very top, with the words Tana Rabbanan. And here we begin. We begin now with a continuation of the discussion of Gzula. Now we're talking about it in the context of Lula, because that's what our parak is talking about. But for part of today, good part of today, we're going to turn the conversation of Gzula, of stolen items, and we're going to move back to Sukkah. Now we're going to talk today about Sukkah Gzula. Now it is fair to ask. The Gemara is not going to mention in today's daf mitzvah haba ba'avera, meaning not one utterance of mitzvah haba ba'avera comes up in today's daf, which is a little bit funny. It's a little bit strange because we're not talking about a stolen sukkah, and what's the difference between a stolen sukkah and a stolen lulav? When did we talk yesterday about a stolen lulav? So we were saying mitzvah haba ba'avera. It's a problem. It's not a problem. It's a disqualification. And yet in today's daf, when we talk about the stolen sukkah, so we're not going to utter a word about mitzvah haba ba'avera. That's a discussion, not in the Gemara. Why doesn't the Gemara mention it? Okay, it's more than noteworthy. But in the meantime, however, let's start. Tana Rabbanan, we're two lines from the very top of the Amud. Sukkah Gzula v'Amasachik Bereshos Rabim Rabbi Leizer Posev v'Chacham v'Machshirin. So I steal a sukkah again, as I'm sure we're all aware. Just to make the most obvious point, the Gemara is not condoning. Obviously, the Gemara is just simply saying what would result if I did, if I stole a sukkah. Or I was mesachech b'rishos rabim, or I just simply make a sukkah in a public area. But they're both examples of basically I misappropriated. I took something that did not belong to me. So sukkah gzula obviously means I stole a sukkah. We'll be more specific in terms of what exactly you stole, the material, the actual sukkah itself. Or we'll be more specific about that in a moment. Or mesachech b'rishos rabim, Rashi points out, that's gezel, meaning a public area, and I used it for myself. That's not mine. It's everyone has as much access to it as I do. I'm not entitled to make a my private sukkah on public property. That's gezel. That's considered theft. So the in both of these cases, we have a machlokas. Now, Rabbi Lozer's position is puzzle. The sukkah is no good. The sukkah is disqualified. And the chachamim say it's kosher. The chachamim, oddly enough, say yeah, it's okay. Again, what's okay is after the fact, meaning after the theft and after the stealing. The sukkah would serve as a good sukkah over sukkahs, but obviously not to condoning the act of theft itself. Amar Rav Nachman Machlokas, b'shitokev v'chaver v'atzil misukaso. Now, Rav Nachman's going to try to be specific in terms of what exactly is going on over here. I stole the sukkah. What does that mean? So Rav Nachman, in qualifying the machlokas amongst the Tanaim, he says, the machlokas is in the following scenario. I take a friend and I basically yank him out of his sukkah. Now, that's the case of the Mishnah. And I should say rather the Braisa. And why? Why is that the case of the Braisa? So Rav Nachman's going to continue to explain. Because you remember, just a short couple days ago, about 4 days ago in the Daf Yomi, we said that according to Rabbi Eliezer, you have to own your own sukkah. You cannot fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah using somebody else's sukkah. Even if you get his permission, you can't use it. It's not going to work. So in other words, according to Rabbi Eliezer, a sukkah shula is no good. A sukkah gzula is no good, according to Rabbi Eliezer, simply for the by virtue of the fact that it doesn't belong to you. So now the Gemara is going to deliberate. Now the point of deliberation over here is whether or not land can be stolen or land cannot be stolen. Okay. Now this should sound familiar because this goes back to yesterday's daf. In yesterday's daf, what do we say? No. Point blank, land cannot be stolen. Karka ain't an exalus. What does that mean? Land cannot be stolen. Meaning, as opposed to movable items, when I take the item, so now that is considered theft. And not only is that considered a theft, but now that I am in possession of the item that I took from somebody else, I stole from somebody else, if the other person has yeush, if he despairs from ever getting back the item, and then there's a further discussion of whether yeush by itself works, or you need yeush plus shinu rishus, yeush plus shinu Hashem, whatever the case is. Meaning, but if we have a stolen item, and there's yeush, so that means I acquire the item. Again, doesn't make what I did right. I stole, but what it does make me is the rightful owner of that item. And yes, I still, of course, have to make restitution for the item which I stole, but nevertheless, I am the proud owner. I don't know about proud. I don't know if I'll get honored at a dinner, but I'll be the owner of that item. So, but when it comes to karka, however, there's no gzela. Meaning by karka, we said yesterday's daf, that there just simply isn't, it's not recognized as an item which is stolen. In other words, property is something where you can clearly see the property is not going anywhere. The only thing that went is the owner. I shoot him off his land. I forcibly removed him from his land. But that's not gzela, that's not gzula. And even if the original owner says, you know, I give up hope, forget about it, I'm not going to get it back, it's not going to change the status of the land. So in yesterday's daf, we said very clearly, karka eina nigzelis, that land cannot be stolen. Now the Gemara today is going to equivocate. And the Gemara today is going to take two sides on this issue. One side is going to be either the land cannot be stolen, or the other side of the issue is that land can be stolen. So what's happening? So as Rashi points out over here, the Gemara over here is just taking, there's a machlokas in the Gemara and Baba Kama, and our Gemara over here is just playing along both sides of the machlokas. So now the Gemara says like this, look, Rabbi Eliezer again. Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim argue about a sukkah that's stolen. Rabbi Eliezer says it's not going to work. The sukkah is not going to be a kosher sukkah. And the Chachamim say it is going to be a kosher sukkah. And Rav Nachman says, what's the case? I take my friend, and I just yank him right out of his sukkah. Rabbi Eliezer says, Einad dam yosi yedei chavasa b'sukkaso shachavero. Now Rabbi Eliezer, consistent with his basic position, which is, I can't fulfill my mitzvah with somebody else's sukkah. Now, e karka nigzals. Now, here the Gemara is going to take both sides of the issue. And the Gemara's basic point is going to be, it doesn't matter. E karka nigzals, if I take the position that land can be stolen, so sukkah gzulahi. So now what am I sitting in? I'm sitting in a sukkah gzula. And as we learned back on Daf Chav Zayin, Rav Elazar says a sukkah gzula simply will not work. It doesn't fulfill the obligation of the mitzvah of yeshiva besukkah. Ve'inam mikarkan einan exalus, and if you take the position that karka cannot, that land cannot be stolen, sukkah shulahi. So then we're talking about a borrowed sukkah. Now borrowed over here, we're using the term really loosely. It's some act of borrowing. Yeah, I'm going to help myself to your sukkah. Thank you very much. Okay, so I understand. It's the term borrowing over here is a loose term, but the term just simply means it's not stolen because there's no gzela when it comes to karka. So the only thing we're left to say is it's just simply not mine. Well, if it's not mine, so for just a lack of any other term, the Gemara uses the term borrowed. But the point is that still won't work according to Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer says that you must use your own sukkah in order to fulfill the mitzvah of yeshiva basukkah. Good. And now the Chachamim, They say that it's kosher, that the sukkah is a valid sukkah, because the Amri Adam, you see, the chavas, the sukkah, so shachavero, because a person fulfills his obligation using somebody else's sukkah, the karka ain't an exalus, and land cannot be stolen, meaning there is no status of theft when it comes to land, and so therefore, when I'm sitting on somebody else's property, again, it's not stolen, because karka ain't an exalus, so what is it? Sukkah shu'ula, so therefore it's a borrowed sukkah. Again, the term shu'ula over here, not the general neighborly, hey, can I borrow your lawnmower? Sure. It's not exactly like that. It's you just yank the person off his ground, but again, just for a lack of any other term, it's not stolen, so therefore it's shu'ula, it's borrowed, and therefore, according to the Chacham, and that's fine. That would be a good sukkah. Aval. So in other words, the Rav Nachman says, I know where they argue. They argue in a scenario where I take a person and I remove him forcibly from his sukkah and I send his sukkah. So Rav Elazar says it's not going to be a good sukkah because you have to either because it's stolen and therefore and you can't fulfill your mitzvah with a stolen sukkah, or because it's borrowed and I too, according to Rav Elazar, you can't fulfill the mitzvah with a borrowed sukkah. And the Chachamim say it works, it's a valid sukkah because it's not stolen, because karka ain't an exalus, and it's considered borrowed, and you can fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah with a borrowed sukkah. When the Chachamim say it's valid, the validity is only going on the sukkah. Everything up until that point in time is invalid. The Chachamim's position over here is just talking about the validity of the actual sukkah itself. Did he fulfill the mitzvah of sukkahs? Yes. Did he do a lot of things that were inappropriate / prohibited prior to that point in time? Sure. In other words, but the ksheira over here is just going on the validity of the sukkah. Aval, however, gazel etim v'zichach behem, but let's say I steal wood. So in other words, I steal the building material. And then I make a sukkah from the building material. Divrei hakol ein lo ela demei etzim. So according to everybody, again, just speaking to the validity of the sukkah, it is a valid sukkah. Not the stealing of the wood, that's invalid. The act of theft is wrong. But in terms of the validity of the sukkah is going to be a good sukkah. And ein lo ela demei etzim, and all the original owner had, meaning the victim, the one who was stolen from, all he has to look forward to is just simply the value of the wood itself. But the wood itself actually made a transfer of possession. In other words, now the thief is rightful. I'm going to use that term loosely, but he is the owner of the wood, and therefore he's fulfilled his mitzvah of sukkah. Two points over here. Okay, first of all, I'm going to go back and I'm just going to review a Rashi, which Rashi makes this point earlier, but I'll just quickly say it. Rashi says, do we remember the Gemara in Baba Kama? So maybe the answer is no. But Rashi says if we did remember the Gemara in Baba Kama, and you know it's you know in Daf Yomi terminology, I'm not sure which side we're closer to, on the back end or on the end coming up. But either way, the Gemara in Baba Kama actually brings down a major debate whether or not land can be stolen or land cannot be stolen. Rashi points out it happens to be the opinion of none other than Rabbi Eliezer that land can be stolen. So the truth of the matter is the Gemara equivocated. Right, the Gemara played both sides of the issue, but Rashi and the truth of the matter is Rashi makes this point that really if we were just consistent with Rabbi Eliezer, we would have said land can be stolen and therefore it's a sukkah gzula, it's a stolen. And why does the Gemara go back and forth? Well, if land can be stolen and if land can't be stolen, why does the Gemara equivocate? So Rashi says because the Gemara just wanted to make sure that we understood that even if, meaning it's a big if, but even if Rabbi Eliezer took the position that land cannot be stolen, it still won't work. So the Gemara just simply wanted to make that position very clear. It doesn't matter whether land can or cannot be stolen. Rabbi Eliezer simply would hold that it's not a good sukkah. Okay, that's point number one. That goes back to a previous Rashi. You could see that in the Rashi of Rabban Latamayu. Now, let's discuss our case in hand. Rav Nachman says that if I steal the material, the building material, and I make a sukkah out of it, it's according to everybody, says Rav Nachman, it's a valid sukkah. Now, why should that be? So let's take a look at Rashi over here. I read the Rashi inside. Rashi says, I can give you a host of reasons why it would be okay. Ein ze lo gzula v'lo she'ula. So this sukkah is neither stolen nor borrowed. Okay. Now, again, I know this is a strange discussion that we're having considering the fact that you stole the building material. But Rashi is going to explain why it is that Rav Nachman says that it's a valid sukkah. So the kanina b'shino emaisa b'shino Hashem. So Rashi says why? Because the thief who stole the building material, he made an acquisition on the actual building material itself. How did he do so? Using the process of shino emaisa and shino Hashem, changing the physical and the actual physical nature of the wood, meaning right, eitzim means raw material. And basically what he must have done is he must have shaved it down in order to make it as good building material for the sukkah. So that's what's called shinui maisa. The Gemara Baba Kama says shinui maisa is a kinyan. It's a means of acquisition. Now, obviously, right, just to state the obvious, that doesn't, first of all, that didn't make his theft right. It was still wrong. He still stole. He obviously has to make full restitution of that which he stole, meaning the value of the item that which he stole. But in terms of ownership, in terms of kinyanim, he now is the owner of the wood that he stole through shinui maisa. The ode, and then Rashi goes on to further articulate, and by the way, you should know, says Rashi, even if there wasn't a physical change in the wood, meaning let's say instead of stealing raw wood, but let's say he actually stole 2x4s. Or, you know, just, in other words, building material that he didn't have to make any change in. He still wouldn't have to return it, and he still is the rightful owner. Why should that be? Because Rashi points out, Vod Mishum Takanas HaShavim. Because Takanas HaShavim. Takanas HaShavim, what's that? So that is based on a Gemara and Gittin. The Gemara and Gittin teaches us that the Chachamim wanted to inspire tshuva. So one of the ways that the Chachamim inspired tshuva is by saying the following. Let's say you stole building material. Let's say you built a building. Okay. And you didn't actually have to make any change in the actual building material itself. Okay, finally your sleepless nights got the best of you. And you know what you said? You said, I really want to do tshuva. But then the Yetzer Hara is on the other side, and the Yetzer Hara is saying, yeah, but what are you going to have to do now? You're going to have to take apart the entire house that you built in order to return the object which you stole, and that's how you're going to have to do tshuva? It's not worth it. So the Chachamim basically said, you know, let's try to make it easier for him. So the Chachamim said that in the event that you steal building material, even though you didn't make any physical change in the actual building material itself, but it's now at the base of a building that you built, you know what? Even though the Torah says v'heishev is gzela, that if you properly want to do tshuva, you have to return the item that you stole, the Chachamim say to the thief, just pay back the item. Meaning you don't have to return the item itself, pay for the value of it, and that's the means in which you could do tshuva. So even if there is no shinui maisa, even if there was no change in the actual item itself, this is what's called takanas hashavim. It's basically a way for the Chachamim to help along those people who want to do tshuva. So Rashi points out over here that even if the building material that you stole in order to make your sukkah, even if you didn't make a physical change in the building material, Rashi says you still have acquired it through this gzeira derabanan. This, it's not even a gzeira, it's a poor way to say it. It's a takana derabanan. It's an institution of the rabbis to help people do tshuva. You don't have to take apart your building. Rashi, I'm continuing reading Rashi. Ela yachzer damim. The only thing you have to do is you just have to pay for it. That's it. Okay. So good. So ad kan, meaning we now have created a scenario in which you stole wood, you made a sukkah out of it, and what Rav Nachman's argument is that as in terms of sukkah, it's a valid sukkah. It's not stolen. Either because you made a physical change in the wood, or because of the rabbinic decree, the rabbinic enactment of Takanas HaShavim. Period. Now we're going to go on in Rashi, but before we go on in Rashi, so let's now think about this. I now have so far created two scenarios in which we stole a sukkah, and according to the Chachamim, it's a valid sukkah. Either what have I done? My friend has made a sukkah for himself right before Sukkot. I take him by his lapel, and I yank him right out, and I sit myself down in a sukkah. So according to the Chachamim, good or no good? Not the act, obviously, but the validity of the sukkah. Good or no? According to the Chachamim, the sukkah is valid. Why? Because again, karka ain't an exelus, because land is not stolen, and so therefore what I'm sitting in is a quote-unquote a borrowed sukkah. Okay. In another scenario we just described, I stole the building material from my friend, I made a sukkah out of it. Good or no good? According to the Chachamim, it's good. It's a valid sukkah. So now, Rashi, after having gone over all this, I'm aware of the fact that all this sounds strange. Meaning we're, and I'm going to repeat, we're not condoning the bad behavior. We're just simply saying that in terms of the result, what yields is...
It's not...
I mentioned that at the beginning of the shir today, that the Gemara is not going to utter a word today about mitzvah ba'avera.
What happened
to mitzvah ba'avera? So I said at the beginning of the shir today, it's noteworthy that the Gemara does not mention it.
If you don't own the schach, the sukkah is no good.
If you don't own the schach, so...
You still
just the schach. Okay, well, just one second. Let me just explain Rashi, and then I'll take questions. So then Rashi, so basically now Rashi's just kind of wondering out loud. Oh, so yanking a guy off his property, the sukkah is valid. Stealing the building material, the sukkah is valid. You know what? Rashi comes to the realization there's no case of sukkah gzula. And that's hard to imagine, because the Gemara back on Daf Chav Zayin, and truth of the matter is today's Gemara as well, but the Gemara back on Chav Zayin says that the Sukkah Gezul is invalid. So Rashi now is just left with one simple question. What would be a case of Sukkah Gezula? Where is it? Where's the case of Sukkah Gezula? So far, we can't seem to have found one. So that's the continuation of Rashi. Now we mentioned 4 days ago in the daf that the Chachamim agree that if it's a stolen sukkah, so it's going to be an invalid sukkah. Why should that be? The Torah says so. What's the case? Where's the case of sukkah gzula? So the Gemara says begozel sukkah mechuber sakarka velo begozel eitzim. I'm sorry, lo begozel sukkah mechuber sakarka. Right? Rashi knows. I know. We can't be talking about a case where I'm yanking a guy off his property velo begozel eitzim v'mistachich behem, and not with stealing wood and putting schach on top of it. Ela begozel sukkah haasuya berosha agala uverosha sfina. So Rashi says, I'm struggling, but here's what I got for you. Rashi says, you know what would be a case of sukkah gzula? Let's say my friend, my neighbor, built a sukkah on the back of his wagon or in the back of his pickup truck. And what do? I steal the wagon. That would be a case of sukkah gzula. Because let's go over. What about the fact that land is not stolen? It's not property. The sukkah was built on top of a wagon. So it's a movable item. What about the fact of shinui? There was no shinui over here. The sukkah was built already. I stole the entire sukkah on the wagon. It's not connected to the ground, so we can't say that karkain and exelus. I didn't do anything to make the sukkah. I invested no time, energy, or resources to make the sukkah. So there's no takanas hashavim. So this would be the scenario, says Rashi, where it would be a sukkah gzula, and under those circumstances, I wouldn't have fulfilled my obligation. Okay. For more discussion, I encourage you, take a look at the second Tosfos on the Amud. Second Tosfos on the Amud attempts to come up with other cases of sukkah gzula according to the Chachamim. Back to the Gemara. Okay. I'm sorry. Right, we're up to Haisafta? Mm-hmm. Okay. In the Gemara, we're in Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, we're about a third of the way down in the Amud. The second word of the line, Haisafta. Now, again, for those who've been with the Daf long enough and been learning long enough, so you know, have enough sophistication to understand that the Gemara deals with the legalities, meaning all the antecedents of the theft and the stealing, obviously that's all wrong, and the Gemara is not legitimizing any of that, obviously. But when the Gemara, what we're dealing with over here is just simply the end result, the end product of such a sukkah. And again, we don't hold like Rabbi Elazar, we hold like the Chachamim. If I take somebody and extract him off his ground, the sukkah is valid. If I steal the material, the building material, and make a sukkah out of it, once again, the sukkah is valid. Okay, but understandably, however, without the sophistication, one would just wonder, like, what are we talking about? Like, what? Like, really? Like, in other words, the Torah would approve an okay such a sukkah? Okay, fine. It's, and I say that all just as a way of introducing the following story. Hayisavta dasla kama to Rav Nachman. There was an elderly woman who came in front of Rav Nachman. Amar le Reish Galusa v'kula Rabbanan de Bei Reish Galusa besuka gzula havayase. And she makes an accusation. She says, "Do you know that the Reish Galusa, together with all the rabbis who are together with the Reish Galusa, so they're sitting in a sukkah gzula." And in the stolen sukkah. And part of her charges, part of her accusation, is that, by the way, do you know where they got the building material for their sukkah? From me. Meaning, she's going to Rav Nachman, and the accusation is, they stole building material from me. Now, I know this is going to sound a little bit callous, but she's screaming to Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman's not paying her any mind. Okay. He says, look, I'm sorry. I mean, the truth of the matter is, I don't even know if he's saying that. The Gemara is just simply saying, L'ashkachba. He doesn't pay her any mind. So, L'ashkachba Rav Nachman. Amarle. So finally she says, I cannot believe. In other words, I'm coming to you with a case. It seems to be that I have a very good case. They stole the sukkah from me. So Amarle, Isisa, Tahavale Lavu, Atlasmea, Vitamne Sre Avde, Savcha Kamaichu. So she says, look, I'm the daughter of somebody who owns 300. And 18 servants, v'lo ashkechisu ba, and you're just ignoring me? She says to Rav Nachman. Now, by the way, who is she referencing? When she says, I'm the daughter of someone who has 318 servants, so it's a reference to Avraham, right? And the 318 could be a reference to Eliezer. Gematria is 318. A lot of people here knew that. So anyway, but basically, she's basically saying, and obviously she's not the direct descendant of Avraham, right? It's Avraham's going back a couple of years, but yeah, you understand. In other words, how could you be ignoring me? What's wrong with you? So Amalu Rav Nachman Pi'isa Hida. Now, just in the event that you think that Rav Nachman maybe had some hearing issues and maybe he didn't hear her, no, he heard her really good. And Rav Nachman says, Pi'isa Hida. Look, she's talking right now, but it's just talk. In other words, we could just pay her no mind. The Ein La Ela Demei Eitzim Bovad, and all she really is entitled to is the value of the wood. Meaning, look, the wood was stolen, and again, we'll go back to the points of Rashi. Either a physical change was made to the wood, or Takanas Shavim. Either way, it was an actual acquisition made on the wood, and so therefore, the only thing she's entitled to is the value of the wood, but not the actual wood itself. She was demanding the wood itself.
Does Takanas Shavim apply to Schach or Sukkah because it's temporary residence?
Yeah, so Danny was also asking a question similar to that. So stay tuned. I'm going to show you Rashi in just a couple of minutes, which probably will address your question. Amar Ravina Haiksh. Okay, so far so good. I know and the way the Gemara presents the story, I know it comes out, it doesn't sound like Rav Nachman is extraordinarily sensitive to the woman, meaning the ruling is a correct ruling. That's nothing to discuss there. But in terms of just the way he's responding to her, I know it sounds harsh. I've contended, not because I'm informed, but I've contended that when the Gemara presents a story like this, there's more to the story, and we only get like a little snippet, so perhaps if you know there's certain amounts of context to the story that we're not familiar with, okay. Amar Ravina, Haikshur de Metalasa de Gzula Avdila Rabban Takanim Mishum Takanis Meirish. So Ravina issues a ruling, which quite frankly has been the topic of discussion, but he says it very clearly that let's say you steal a beam, right? A kshur is a beam. So in other words, no physical change was done to the actual beam itself. It was just laid as the foundation of a sukkah. So Avdil Rabbanan Takanas Mishum Takanas Meirish. So the rabbis instituted the Takanas Hashavim, which is basically what we've been discussing. The standard Takana where if I steal a beam and I make it as part of my building, I don't have to return the actual beam itself, but if I want to do tshuva, I simply need to pay its value. Okay. Pshita. Now the Gemara says it's obvious. So the Gemara says, well, the only way, in other words, what Ravina did is just basically repeat what we already know. The Gemara says, no, maybe he injected a little bit of a chiddush, because we were talking about wood, and maybe the argument you can make regarding wood is, eitzim, wood is shchiach, meaning wood, you can get wood anywhere. I'll just pay for the value, and then the victim, who I stole from, can just simply turn around and replace the wood very easily. But a beam, we're talking about now, a cut beam, a thick beam, Maybe that's not as common. Maybe the rabbis didn't make the takana for a beam, kamash malan, that's a chiddush. Now here we go. Hani Mili, and Ben and Danny, you asked this question. What about the fact that it's a sukkah? Meaning, and maybe you can make the following argument. The rabbis instituted this takana shavim if you're building a house. Because the idea is, I want to do tshuva, I don't want to take apart my house. But a sukkah, maybe you can make the argument, a sukkah is a temporary dwelling place. Maybe no, maybe the rabbis didn't make the takana. So now here we go, hani mila bego shiva. Avalabasa shiva, hader be'ene. The idea that the rabbis employed takana shavim is only for the 7 days of sukkahs. Once sukkahs is over, now if you want to do tshuva, now you must take apart your sukkah in order to return the actual beam itself. Now if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi writes the following. Rashi can be found, the last, second to last short line. Towards the bottom of the Amud. Mimnei tekanas merish v'lo arminan ein kan hefse meruba v'yastir sukkah. So, we don't say that you have to take down your sukkah. De mitzvah mashvile kol shiva kibinyan keva. Because what sukkahs does, and what the mitzvah of sukkah does, is that for 7 days, it transforms that sukkah into your home. Meaning basically what the mitzvah does, is that that building, even though it's a 7-day building, the mitzvah transforms into a home. So whatever benefits you get from being a homeowner for during the 7 days of sukkahs, you get those same benefits as being a sukkah owner. And so therefore we know that as a homeowner, so any stolen material used to build your home, I don't have to take apart my house. For the 7 days of sukkahs, any stolen material that I used to build the sukkah, I don't have to take apart my sukkah. I can leave the sukkah intact, and if I want to do tshuva, I simply go over and I pay him for the value of the building material. Yeah, correct. So I think, right, and I hope I'm not going off on a limb, I think that the Gemara over here and the Rashi over here is even according to the Chachamim. Meaning that even the Chachamim say that the sukkah is a binyan arai, but that's talking about the construction of the building. But in terms of the actual sukkah itself, no, the Torah basically says that's your home for 7 days. Okay. I was thinking that as well, but I don't think the position over here is limited to Rabbi Yehuda. back to the Gemara. So Hani Mila Bego Shiva Valabasa Shiva Hadabene. The Ichibra Batina Filach Shiva Nami Yavle Deme. And then the Gemara says, oh, by the way, if let's say not only did you make a sukkah, but with mortar. And in other words, then I really cemented it down. So then even after sukkahs, I don't have to take it apart. I'm obviously looking at it to be a permanent edifice, and so therefore I don't have to return the material. I could just simply pay for the item itself. Okay, Adkan, that's really the first part of today's daf. So again, just to quickly reiterate and to summarize, first part of today's daf, sukkah gzula, stolen sukkah. Now again, it's not really that, this goes back to the second parak. It's Gemara over here is on a little bit of a tangent, but the reason why is because we just talked about lulav hagazel, so we just went off into a tangent of sukkah gzula. So sukkah gzula, is it going to be a valid sukkah? The answer is primarily yes. That's going to be a valid sukkah. The theft itself, obviously, wrong. That's stealing. Right? Prohibition in the Torah. But in terms of the actual result, in terms of the sukkah that you use to make it, so the sukkah is a valid sukkah. And then we went through Rashi. Rashi carved out one scenario where the sukkah would not be a good sukkah, and it would actually be a sukkah gzula. And I mentioned Tosfos. We didn't see the Tosfos inside, where Tosfos comes up with a couple of other scenarios as well. Why doesn't the Gemara over here on today's daf mention mitzvah haba b'avera? So that's a really excellent question. I mentioned you could see the Gemara back on daf test, and you could see Tosfos back on daf test touches on this issue. There's a Ridvan today's daf which I saw, but just not.
Avera is like in a case where you have no alternative to actually do it.
Right. Okay. Look, it really deserves its own discussion. Why mitzvah haba b'avera is not breathed in today's daf? Okay, it's its own discussion. It's a chabur worthy material. Yes. Right. Well, you can, but Rav Huna in yesterday's daf, in order to avoid the mitzvah haba b'avera issue, basically says, Let him cut it. Let him sell to you. You will turn sell to somebody else, and eventually it will lose the status of mitzvah baba avera. Over here, the perpetrator of the theft is the one who's enjoying the sukkah. So and meanwhile, the gemara is not bothered by mitzvah baba avera. No, in yesterday's daf, remember, in other words, it wasn't, he was the one who did the act of theft, it was the landowners who did the act of theft, and Rav Huna made sure to tell him, you don't cut it. Have somebody else cut it, and then you buy it from him, and right? That's, here, the thief himself is sitting in the sukkah. So it's really different.
Why didn't they go to court rather than go to a rabbi?
The rabbi was the court. Rav Nachman, when she went to Rav Nachman, she went to him as a Beis Din. Rav Nachman was the head of the Beis Din.
And can you apply this to a lulav as well, an esrog?
No, the Gemara yesterday's daf said that a stolen lulav is no good. So again, the difference between a lulav and a sukkah, that's the discussion. Which again, it's a big discussion. I'm avoiding it, but okay, that's. But again, though, even if I steal the material. The Gemara is not bothered by mitzvah baba avera. So that, in other words, correct. I mean, the property itself, I understand, is not stolen. But even if I just steal the material and I build the sukkah,
then once it becomes part of the sukkah, it becomes part of the real property.
I do hear that. Okay, look, okay. No, the Rambam's not going to deviate from the Gemara. The Rambam, all the scenarios that we just... I mean, see the Rambam inside. All the scenarios that we just painted, the Rambam is going to say this. Sukkah is a valid sukkah in all these scenarios. Going back to the Gemara, continuing now. Step two of today's daf, Tana. Okay, this is part two of today's daf, and we go back to Lulav, and we go back to... and now we turn the discussion, we leave the world of Gzela, and we don't go back to the world of Yavish, dry lulav. What do we say about dry lulav? Dry lulav is no good. Remember why? So we gave yesterday three explanations. Number one, we said Rashi, Zekeli Vanveu, the mitzvahs have to be beautiful. Your dry lulav is not beautiful. Tosfos says because of the connection between the lulav and the esrog. The esrog is described as Prietz Hadar, a beautiful fruit, and so just like beauty has to guide the parameters of an esrog, so too it also has to guide the parameters of a lulav, and that's Tosfos' explanation. And finally, we quoted the name of the Ravid, who quoted the Yerushalmi, and I suggested yesterday it's the Yerushalmi, and I did a little more research, and it is a Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi says that lo hamesim yahaluka, right? The dead can't praise God, and when your lulav is dry, so it's kames, it's like it's dead, and therefore cannot serve as a good lulav. Either way, Tana Yavish Pasul. So we learned in a Braisa that if your lulav is dry, it's disqualified. Okay, we knew that already. That's not why we're quoting the Braisa. It's the next words of the Braisa that the Gemara wants to focus in. Rav Yehuda Machshir. And Rav Yehuda says that if your lulav is dry, it's okay. It works. It's a kasher lulav. Amar Rava Machlokas Balulav. So Rava says that the entire debate over here between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda is specific to Lulav. The Rabbanan Savir Makshin Lulav Lasrog Masrog Bayhadar Af Lulav Bayhadar. Where the Chachamim say, look, there's a Hekesh. Just like an Asrog requires it, the Torah demands the Asrog be beautiful, and meaning not dry. Same thing is true regarding the Lulav. Rav Yehuda Savir Makshin Lulav Lasrog. And Rav Yehuda says we don't make a Hekesh between Lulav and Asrog. Aval Be Asrog, Divrei Kol Hadar Bina. But when it comes to Asrog, how can we have a debate? The Torah describes the Esrog as being pre-Eitz Hadar. It's got to be beautiful. So what Rav is arguing is that there's no debate when it comes to the Esrog. The only debate is limited to the Lulav. Okay. Before we go on in the Gemara, tucked away over here is a very interesting debate between Rashi and Tosfos, and really fundamental. And that is the following. If you take a look at Rashi, starting with the words... let me just find myself. Lo makshinan. We don't make a hekesh. It's a third wide line in Rashi. Rashi writes, Lo hikshu lo mozemi zeh. Velo nitan la drosh me atzmo me kol yud gimel mido shatar nidreshas bahem ela kavachomer. Rashi says that there's no hekesh. And Rashi then goes on to write, you can't make up a hekesh. The only way you could say a hekesh is only if you have a tradition from your Rebbe who got it in turn from his Rebbe. And then Rashi says, and you know what, that's true by all the Gimel Midosh HaTorah Nidrashas Bahem. Meaning, there are 13 ways to, there are 13 methodologies in terms of how to darshan the Torah. Right, we say it at the end of Karbanos every morning, right before Pesukah de Zimra. And these 13 methodologies, Rashi says, you cannot come up with them on your own. The only thing you could do on your own is Kal V'Chomer. Kal V'Chomer is the only thing, right, to make a logical argument to go from a lighter to a more stringent law. So that you could do on your own, but the other 12, says Rashi, cannot be done on your own.
What do you mean?
You need, in other words, in order to say it, you have to have a tradition from your Rebbe.
You cannot apply it by yourself.
Can't apply it by yourself.
Somebody has to start.
Now, two interesting points about Rashi. So the first interesting point about Rashi is that Rashi says this is true regarding Hekesh as well. Fine. And point number one, Ben beat me to it, is that Hekesh is not one of the 13 principles. Okay, in of itself, that's interesting. Meaning, why isn't Hekesh part of the 13 principles? Okay, that's point number one.
The question is, somebody has to study.
Yeah, okay, understood. Meaning, then it becomes strange. How can we have a debate? Meaning, if the only way you could say it is having received a tradition, so how can we have a debate? So if you take a look at Tosfos over here, Tosfos, third Tosfos on the Amud, so Tosfos fundamentally disagrees with Rashi. Tosfos says, no. Perish Bekuntras, he quotes Rashi, and then just to skip for the interest of time, the third Tosfos on the Amud. Yeah. Or the Rav Yehuda Sefer Lo Makshin Lulav Lasok, Perish Bekuntras Lo Hukshel Lo Mazemizev, Lo Nitin Lejosh Me'atzmom, he called you come into Shetar Nejoshes Bahem. After promising we're going to skip, I then read it. Ela Kal V'chomer, V'tima Gedola. Tosfos says, I really struggle with this Rashi. Perish da afil smuchim da hanushneim across the smuchim zelazet ninu li darsh min haTorah. Two psukim that are next to one another, that are contiguous next to are contiguous to each other. So we learned in the beginning of the Gemara Yevamos that we have the right if we deem it appropriate to darshan. And he quotes the Gemara in Yevamos, and Kol Shekein, and I'm skipping a couple lines, Kol Shekein Hekesha, Dainu Shein Dvar Ma'amukashim Be'Pasuk Echad. Now, if Smuchim, which are two Psukim that are next to one another, we have the right to Darshan. So Hekesh, which is even stronger, that's two ideas in the same Pasuk, for sure we have the right to Darshan. On our own. V'afil Rav Yehuda de lo dar smuchin ela hech demuchach mufne kedamin anasnan mikom akom bekesha moda ela kol hamidos. This is the key line of Tosfos. Kol hamidos adam dan mi'atzmo chutz me'gzer shava. Tosfos is on the all the way on the other side of the spectrum. The yud gimel midos, right? If we deem it proper, so we can expound, we can darshan. By the way, when I say we, I'm not sure who I'm including in the we, right? But whoever the we are, so we have the right to expand, we have the right to darshan. And the only thing that you need a tradition for is gzeirah shavah, right? Creating a halacha based on the same word being used in two different locations in the Torah, right? The hyperlink that we've spoken about, that you need a tradition. Right. So, but when it comes to the when it comes to the other 12, so that you could do on your own. So really over here, you really are dealing, Rashi and Tosfos are two ends of the spectrum. Rashi saying that Kal V'Chomer is the only thing that we could do on our own, and everything else you need a Kabbalah, you need a tradition, and Tosfos says no, just the opposite. Gzeir Shav is the only thing that needs a tradition, and the rest of it we could do on our own. So really over here, tucked away in this Gemara, is really just a fundamental machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos in terms of what you need a tradition for versus what you could do on your own. Back to the Gemara. The Gemara now is just to argue that according we have a machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda whether your lulav can be dry. Tanakhama says it can't. Rav Yehuda says it can. And what Rav is now trying to do is limit the entire machlokes to just a lulav. But an esrog, of course an esrog has to be beautiful. Of course it can't be dehydrated because the Torah describes the esrog as being pre-etz adar. The Gemara says this is true. So the Gemara says, first of all, let's attack this from the lulav standpoint. Really, Rabbi Huda doesn't require the lulav to be beautiful. Let's take a look at the Mishnah. Rabbi Huda Omer Yagdidim Alamala. if your lulav starts splitting, so starts spreading, I should say. So what do you do? Rav Yehuda says, tie it up. So my time alamishum debay hader. So isn't it because he requires the lulav to be beautiful? Lo kediktani time. Rav Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Tarfon kapus tamarim kafus. No, has nothing to do with a hadar requirement, with a beautiful, with a beautifying of the lulav. It just happens to do with the word itself. The Torah, when describing the lulav, says kapos tamarim. Now, kapos tamarim, we're darshaning kafus. Kafus means to be tied up together, bound together. The Gemara says v'lo bayadu v'atzanan einogdin as a lulav ela bimino. Did Rabbi Yehuda, when you bind your lulav, you have to use a same species to tie it up. My time alam mishum de bayadar. Well, isn't it for the purposes of aesthetics? The Gemara says no. Lo dahama rava filo b'siva filo b'ikar d'dikla. No, this has nothing to do with aesthetics. You could take the root of a palm tree and tie it up with the root. Okay, that may not be aesthetically pleasing. That's not the issue. What's the issue? Vela my time with Rav Yehuda asked them to cut several lulav tzarich aged, because Rav Yehuda, consistent with his position, which we've seen already a couple of times in the Masechta, that a lulav needs to be bound up. And if I bind it up now with another species, so then I'm going to be introducing a fifth species, and that would be a violation of Baal Tosif. Okay, good. So therefore, Gemara so far concluded that according to Rav Yehuda, there is no hider requirement when it comes to the lulav. Got it. What about the esrog? Uv esrog me by Rav Yehuda hader v'atanya. The esrog, I'm going to now argue, even Rav Yehuda doesn't require the esrog to be beautiful. Now mind you, how strange we're about to argue, where the Torah describes the esrog as being pre-Eitz Hadar, and the Gemara now, for the next, say 10 to 15 lines of Gemara, is about to argue, Rav Yehuda doesn't require the esrog to be beautiful. So the Gemara says, well, let's cite evidence. You can't subtract and you can't add. Lo masa esrog. Let's say you can't find an esrog. So you'll say, you know what? It's a tough year. We're looking for the citron, can't find it.
Right.
Okay, so lo yavi lo pars v'lo rimon v'lo davar acher. All right, we'll substitute. We'll get another fruit. Pomegranate's a beautiful fruit. Okay, so let's substitute with a pomegranate. So the Gemara says, no, you can't do it. It's not going to work. Kamushin ksherim. Now, if it's withered, it's okay. Yavashin. Now, but if it's dry, pasul would be pasul. Rav Yehuda omer af yavashin. Rav Yehuda says, you know what? I wouldn't mind if it's dry. Even if it's dry, it's okay. The Amr of Yehuda, in fact, to bolster that position, we turn the page. We're on Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. Bivnei Krachin Shayu Marishna Sulam Levnei Bneihem. In fact, it happens to be in the cities out in the boonies, right in a town called Yenemsville. So what they would do is that they would pass the lulavs on to the next generation. Okay, so obviously, right, if you inherited a lulav from your father or from your Zaidi, so that's a seriously dry lulav. But in Lahem Brewer, they had no choice. That's all they had. So, Livnei B'neim, Amru Lo, they say to him, Isham Raya? Oh, come on, that can't be a good proof. Ain't Shah said to Chag Raya. That's a time of desperation. In other words, they simply had nothing else. So, but anyway, but what seems to be an argument over here is, Tanakhama says he can't use a dry lulav. Rav Yehuda says he can. But what the Gemara is further arguing is that as much as Rav Yehuda is allowing the dry lulav, he's also allowing the dry esrog. Now why is the Gemara making that argument? Because in the context of the Braisa, Rav Yehuda is not making any differentiation. To which the Gemara now is going to argue, see the Gemara inside, so ketanim yes Rav Yehuda omer af yavashin, ksherin. Even if it's dry, my lav a esrog, isn't he also talking about the esrog lo alulav? So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. He's just limiting his comments to the lulav, not to the esrog. Okay. Amar mar kishem sheim pochas meim kachem mosifin aleim pshita. You can't take away from the dalaminim, it can't be three, and you can't add. So the Gemara says, now, isn't that obvious? No, ma'u detei mahov amar Rav Yehuda lulav tzarech eged. So the Gemara says, no, because here's what I might have thought. Rav Yehuda says that a lulav requires a binding. And you could have made an argument that, look, even though I'm taking a fifth species, but it's outside of the bound other four species, maybe you could make an argument that this is not Baal Tosif. Look, they're clearly differentiated. This is not bound with the others. Kamash Malan. So the Chiddush of the Gemara is, no, even though it's not bound with the others, and even though Rav Yehuda requires an Eged, still you're in violation of Baal Tosif. Once again, I reference, but we're not going to go through it. It's the Tosfos who discusses why that should be. That even though it's not bound with the others, it's still a violation of Baal Tosif. Amar Amar. Lo matza esrog lo yavi lo rima v'lo pirish v'lo davar acher. If you did not find an esrog, so you can't bring a pomegranate or whatever the parish is. How do they translate it? Whatever, another type of fruit. So pshita mau detema leisikol hechash lo tishkach toros esrog kamash malan. Again, the Gemara says, isn't that so obvious? The Gemara says, no, maybe not. Maybe we could have made an argument. Look, let's just remember. Remember the esrog. Meaning this year we don't have an esrog. We're not going to be able to, unfortunately, we're not going to fulfill the mitzvah. But maybe, just to help us remind ourselves, let's get the lemon out. And let's throw the lemon into the mix. And the Gemara says that's a terrible idea. Because you use a lemon one year, even though we all know we're not fulfilling the mitzvah. But once you introduce a lemon into the four species, so then what's going to happen, the Gemara knows, is that the lemon will become an acceptable component to the dalamin. So therefore, under no circumstances, even if it's just to remind each other, here's what it once was. Tashma, esrog hayashan pasul Rabbi Yehuda machshir. If you have an esrog which is old, it's disqualified, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's kasher. So what comes out now is that not only does Rabbi Yehuda allow a dry lulav, he also allows a dry esrog as well, tiyufta de rava tiyufta. And the Gemara says, and you know what that does? That refutes Rava's position. Rava said, so not only did the Gemara argue that Rav Yehuda allows a dry esrog, the Gemara actually concludes that Rav Yehuda allows a dry esrog, and we have refuted the thesis of Rava. The Gemara says, now, all this is really strange. We're going to get to the question in just a moment. How can you possibly say that? First of all, we don't possibly like Rav Yehuda. But still, how can you even argue that? The Torah describes the esrog as being kriyat hadar. We're going to get to that question in just a moment. So the Gemara says, "V'lo by hadavan antanan hayaru kakarti Rabbi Meir machshir Rabbi Yehuda postal." A green esrog, a bright green esrog. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's no good. So lamishum de by hadar, isn't it because it lacks aesthetics? So lamishum de lo gamar peyre. The Gemara says no. The issue over there is very simple. It has nothing to do with aesthetics. It's just simply not ripened. It's not fully developed yet. It's undeveloped, and the Torah demands that you take a developed fruit. Tashma shir esrog katan Rabbi Meir omer kegos Rabbi Yehuda omer kebeitza. What's the smallest size of an esrog? Rabbi Yehuda says it has to be the size of an egg. Lamishum de bayahadar, lamishum de lo gamar pere. Now the Gemara says, now why can't it be smaller than an egg? Isn't it because it's an aesthetic issue? And the Gemara says, no, once again, if it's smaller than the volume of an egg, it's just simply not fully developed. Tashma v'gadol kedei shiachu shnayim biyado achas de Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi omer afilu achad b'shtei yadav. How large can the esrog be? So Rav Yehuda says it can be no larger than two fitting into one hand. And Rav Yehuda says no. I'm sorry, and Rav Yossi disagrees. And Rav Yossi says no, even if you need two hands to hold the lulav, right? You ever see the Yemenite esrog? Even if you need two hands to hold it, so that would be okay. Now, once again, the Gemara's argument, my time, Allah Mishum Dabai Hadar, so isn't it an aesthetic issue? Meaning, isn't it that Rav Yehuda doesn't want the esrog to be too big because too big is not aesthetically pleasing? Lo, kevin da maraba, lula biyamin, v'esrog bismol, zimin da mechafele, v'asil la'af v'chune, v'asil la'af sule. So the Gemara says, no, it's not an aesthetic issue, it's a pragmatic issue. Because what's going to end up happening is that we know the lulav has to be held in your right, the esrog has to be held in your left. Sometimes you'll pick it up and it'll be reversed. And so what you need to do is you need to swap. And if the esrog is too big, you're going to swap. And in that swap, the esrog is going to fall, and it's going to break, and it's saying, and you're going to lose your esrog. So it has nothing to do with aesthetics; it just has to do with pragmatics. The elul Rav Yehuda haksiv hadar, and now we'll finish up today's daf with the most basic issue, a most basic question, and that is, I'm not following. So it comes out now that according to Rav Yehuda, my lulav can be dry. So there's no hadar requirement by lulav. My esrog can be dry. Esrog, the Torah says, priyetz hadar. How could it possibly be? So the Gemara says, Priyat Sadar has nothing to do with beauty according to Rav Yehuda. Haksiv Hadar, Hu Hadar, Bi Ilano, Mishana, Lishana. So the Gemara's response is, nope. The word Priyat Sadar according to Rav Yehuda has nothing to do with beauty. Hadar means from one year to the next. Hadar, Bi Ilano, Mishana, Lishana. It exists on the tree from year to year. Most fruit trees, I'm going to sound like I know what I'm talking about. Don't get confused. But most fruit trees, so at the end of the season, fruit drop off the tree. Good. The aspen tree, go visit the orchard. My next trip to Eretz Yisrael, I plan on doing so. But go visit the orchard, and you're going to see they stay on. The aspen does not come off the tree, and it stays on the tree from year to year. So the Gemara says that's one of the simanim in the Torah. That's one of the hints in the Torah that we're talking about the esrog, because it stays on the tree from year to year, and that's what the word hadar means in this context. Hadar bi'ilano mishana l'shana. Okay, good. So two parts of today's daf. First part is sukkah gzula. Under most circumstances, the sukkah is valid. Under limited circumstances, it is considered sukkah gzula and invalid. And then we went on to discuss the requirement of beauty. Rav Yehuda says that the lulav doesn't need to be beautiful, and we've concluded, neither does the esrog. Okay. We don't pass more like Rav Yehuda.